one show gives you the information that can change and shape your life. The IMA Doctors. Get straight talk and honest answers to your healthcare questions from the team of doctors at IMA Healthcare.
Today on the IMA Doctor Show, we have Dr. Michael Blankenship from IMA Healthcare. Dr. Blankenship is a board-certified dermatologist who provides comprehensive care to patients with various types of skin tint conditions and diseases. Hey, welcome back to the studio, Dr. Blankenship. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's start with this. Let's talk about body art, okay? Whether you wanted it when you were 19, now at 30, you decide it's not so great. Maybe you've got a I Love Carla, and Carla's not a part of your life anymore. Maybe your favorite band was ISIS, and you have that tattooed on your shoulder, and you don't want that anymore. When it comes to tattoo removal or getting rid of some of this stuff, where are we at right now with it? Because it used to be that people said, well, it's just too expensive. I might as well just keep it here and always wear long sleeve shirts.
It's not inexpensive to get rid of depending on the size of the tattoo, but moderate size and small tattoos can usually be removed relatively economically.
And how are we doing it?
Laser therapy, well, you can just cut them out, but we rarely do that anymore.
No, thank you.
We rarely do that anymore. Laser therapy is considered to be the gold standard for most tattoos these days. Quality switched lasers, also called Q switched, but there's a new generation out called picosecond lasers, which do a better job, especially for some of the more blue green colors, fewer treatments and less damage to the tissue.
And so, what is it actually doing? Is it just fading it in a faster method? I mean, you know, will you ever see that again? Does it go away completely?
So it can. So what the lasers do are, it's something called a photoacoustic effect. And so a very brief burst of laser energy is absorbed by the tattoo ink, and then it's rapidly heated up, and then it actually cracks with this sort of mini thunderclap. And it breaks the tattoo particles up into the ink particles up into smaller pieces of tissue that then your body's immune cells kind of gobble up and then move out of the tissue to be excreted. And that's why the tattoo is permanent. The ink particles that are placed in your skin are too large for your immune cells to actually gobble up. They can't get their mouths around it, essentially. And so the laser breaks it up about once every 4 to 6 weeks into smaller and smaller pieces, and your body actually, your immune cells actually remove the tattoo ink.
Is there anything medical that you would say someone should not get a tattoo? Other than regret, that's not medical. That's just human nature.
So some people have diseases that demonstrate something called the isomorphic response, where if they get inflammation in one area of their body, it will make an unrelated disease pop up there. And so those people are always at risk of having that happen around a tattoo placement. Other diseases like to pop up in tattoos from time to time, such as a condition called sarcoidosis. And so those patients probably, strictly medically, I would recommend probably not get a tattoo. But for most people, unless you happen to become allergic to one of the inks, it's not really a dangerous thing as long as sterile procedures are taken while you get the tattoo.
Okay, so I've come in and I've decided that I want to get rid of the battleship that I've got on my forearm, okay?
Yep.
How long does it am I sitting under a laser for 5 hours? Does it hurt?
No, the treatments are actually relatively quick. Most normal size tattoos can be treated within 5 to 10 to 15 minutes, and 15 would be excessive. The newer laser, it does sting because we are heating up this tissue and there are little micro explosions happening inside of your skin.
Do you think it's less painful than actually getting the tattoo?
That depends on the area of the body.
Oh, yep. Okay.
So there are some areas where it's very painful to get a tattoo, and then there are other areas where it's very painful to get lasered off. But for relatively small tattoos, if patients have trouble with it, I can actually completely anesthetize the area with local anesthetic. For other people with larger amounts, I can put a high-level topical anesthetic on that takes away a good portion of the pain.
Oh, that's nice. Do you get a lot of people who come in and inquire about that?
Yes. Yeah. For a lot of different reasons, people want tattoos to be gone. Sometimes just simply that they fade and they don't look quite as good or sharp as before. Other times it's a wedding band and the marriage is no longer present or things like that.
Sure. I understand that you've got a lot of other laser services at IMA. So it seems to me like lasers and the medical field go hand in hand in a lot of ways. Laser hair removal. What's some of the other things that you help people utilizing laser technology with?
A lot of different things. So you can remove benign pigmented lesions, so things like freckles and these things called seborrheic keratosis can be lasered off. From a medical perspective, we have a carbon dioxide laser, which can be used to vaporize certain types of growths. Warts can be treated with a laser called a V-beam laser, which can also be used to treat vascular anomalies like port wine stains or angiomas, you know, essentially blood vessel overgrowths on people's skin.
Do a lot of people come into you with something like a wart and they've tried to take care of it themselves and, gosh, you know, I've tried a patch three times, nothing happened, so now I'm coming in and actually seeing a professional.
Yeah, typically, unless the wart's very painful, people usually do try to take care of it for at least a month or two at home. And actually, the over-the-counter salicylic acid plasters are pretty effective, and, you know, a lot of people will have improvement from them, but a lot will not. Warts can be very stubborn, especially on the hands and the feet and other areas of thick skin.
As a medical professional, laser technology is ultra fine. Right. That's one of the things that people like about lasers the most is that you get all of this, you know, there's fewer, I guess, guesswork pieces now that you're using something that's so refined like this. But for you, clearly it's something that's gone on where I can't imagine that you are always recommending a laser treatment.
No. In fact, for warts, for instance, typically I don't recommend laser treatment as initial therapy because freezing or cryotherapy actually has slightly better evidence for it, and tissue does heal from that somewhat better. So I usually will do a standard therapy like that, at least one or two treatments, and if it doesn't look like I'm making any progress, then I'll switch to something else.
Can you tell me a little bit about phototherapy, and is it called a Huva booth?
That's one of the brand names of a booth. And so phototherapy can be delivered either in a booth, which looks essentially like a tanning bed standing up, or with a laser called an excimer laser. And it can be used to treat a variety of conditions, ranging from eczema and psoriasis, which are very common, to vitiligo, a condition where your body loses its pigment, all the way to certain types of cancers actually can be treated.
There was something that a family member told me about years ago where their daughter had pityriasis rosea.
Pityriasis rosea. Mm-hmm.
And they had to get a note from their doctor to get into a tanning booth. They're like, you need some, you know, you need more vitamin D or whatever, middle of the winter, right? Because here we spend a lot of the year with our skin completely covered up from head to toe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with pityriasis rosea, you can make it go away faster with narrowband UVB phototherapy. We typically, or at least I don't recommend tanning beds because they're not well calibrated. They kick out a bunch of rays that aren't really doing you much good, but rather are causing photoaging and cancer. So typically I will recommend the use of only medical booths where we very tightly control the wavelengths that are used as well as the energies and are very safe.
Do you have to, if I came into IMA and you said this therapy might help me, am I getting on a big long list?
No. So with the booth, very rarely do we need to get like pre-permission from your insurance company, and we often will actually start treatment that day. With the laser, because the treatments are somewhat more expensive, insurance companies will generally want to do a prior authorization, and that process can take a couple of weeks. But no, you're not on a large list. As soon as we get the okay to do it, we'll start treating right away.
So summer's not over yet, Dr. Blankenship.
Not quite.
And, as you had mentioned earlier, Labor Day is right around the corner, and for whatever reason, we've stopped really caring about slathering the sunscreen on. Maybe because we think, well, we're far from the harsh rays of summer, so these are the easier rays. Do you see a lot of people coming in at this point saying, I wish I would have worn some extra sunscreen?
Oh, for sure, yeah. We get bad sunburns even, you know, into September, just like we'll get bad sunburns in April that catch people off guard because the weather's not hot yet. But the ultraviolet rays, especially the UVB rays, they peak on the summer solstice, which is toward the end of June.
We've had you in here a number of times, and we've talked about sunburn relief and how to prevent a sunburn. Are some people more susceptible to sunburns than other people?
Sure. So people with less melanin in their skin, very light people with light eye color, light hair color, or people who don't make melanin make pheomelanin, the redheads, they don't have nearly the protection from ultraviolet rays. So their effective dose to get a burn is much lower.
Okay. When it comes to something like skincare, I think you see it advertised everywhere, right? You've got companies that make lotion that make 70 different variations of it. When it comes to trusting like a skincare line, I understand you guys have now kind of picked your favorites.
We do carry a line of products, Revision, which tends to be relatively economic and very well tolerated by most people. There are a lot of options out there. Some of them are more expensive than others. Some are better tolerated than others, but Revision's a good product line for most people.
Are you finding that people are coming in telling you, oh, I've heard the word exfoliate a lot, so I really want to exfoliate my skin, and so I've been using this sugar scrub that I got in a bargain bin, and for some reason my skin's always irritated.
Yeah, people really love scraping their skin off. I'm not really sure why, is, but they really like going to town on it. A couple of years ago, the big thing was those charcoal masks, and people were getting terrible damage to the top layer of their skin from that as well. You know, realistically speaking, most people don't need to exfoliate heavily, and even when they do, I usually don't recommend mechanical means. I'll usually recommend a chemical mean with like ammonium lactate lotions or urea creams.
When it comes to bar soap, do you like bar soap for people when they're washing in the shower, or would you rather that they use some kind of a body wash?
It's down to personal preference, actually.
Really?
And there are a lot of good true soaps, which can be harsh on people with sensitive skin, such as people with eczema. But there are a lot of non-soap cleansers, both in liquid and bar form. Vanicream Bar, Free and Clear Bar, they do good jobs.
Yep. And when it comes to, so the other day I was I had to stain a banister, okay? Yep. And I got some stain on my fingers. And so I went in and I tried to wash it off, couldn't get it off. And so my neighbor's like, just use some mineral spirits. Just, you know, slap them on your hand. So I did that and I regretted it immediately. And I noticed that for the next day, no matter how many times I washed my hands, they still smelled like that chemical a little bit. And then I was afraid because I was going to eat pretzels, right? I'm like, well, it smells like it. So it probably is still on my fingers a little bit. When somebody does something like introduces like gasoline or something to their hand by accident, maybe they're filling the mower, is there anything that they can do to, you know, other than wearing a glove to protect that hand or after the contact's made?
You know, once it's exposed, just repeated washing with a non-soap cleanser, you know, a Dove, something like that, until it's removed. I typically don't recommend trying to use another solvent to get it off because they tend to be organic, and those, just like the gasoline, can be dangerous.
So you get a lot of people who've come in and be like, yeah, someone told me to mix this thing up and that concoction turned out to chemical burns. I imagine you must see on a regular basis from people who touch a battery and didn't mean to touch a battery and they don't know why it's burning.
You know, most of the bad chemical burns end up at the emergency department. And so I usually only get consulted if it's something where there's a big question about how to manage the patient. But no, I do get alkali burns, base burns in my clinic from time to time.
When someone comes in and let's say they were in the ER and this is, you know, them following up and says, gosh, you know, what should I be doing to keep my hands healthy now that I have a bandage on them? You know, my wife believes in if I've got a Band-Aid on, remove the Band-Aid at night so it can breathe overnight. She's a big fan of letting wounds and rashes and things breathe.
Yeah, typically speaking, the skin gets its oxygen and everything else through the bloodstream, and actually letting it dry out and exposing it to air can slow healing in many instances. So with some exceptions, we actually would rather prefer, especially burn wounds, to be covered with a moist occlusive dressing.
Okay. Let's get into the text club because you've got a lot of questions coming in already. Okay. Dr. Blankenship, have you read the peer-reviewed studies that indicate sunscreen causes skin cancer?
So there are a couple of studies that have been put out there, and so they have to be taken with the correct sort of context. So some of the earliest ones, and these are actually from decades ago, demonstrated that when groups of people were broken up and some given sunscreen and some given not, higher rates of skin cancer were sometimes seen in the sunscreen group. However, in those particular instances, the reasoning for that was eventually found, and it was because those sunscreens were not particularly effective at blocking all types of ultraviolet light, and because the patients weren't burning, the group that was getting the sunscreen was actually spending more time in the sun, and they were getting higher amounts of ultraviolet light overall, which did increase their skin cancer risk. When broad spectrum sunscreens were used that were effective at the correct SPF and wavelengths, they do decrease skin cancer. Some both components of creation of chemical sunscreens as well as the chemical sunscreens themselves can be mutagenic and is therefore potentially cancer-causing on certain assays, and they can be found in the blood of people using them at very small amounts. But the critical thing there is the threshold. So even though a compound may be possible to cause cancer, if it's not above a certain critical threshold, then the risk is very, very low. And then with the physical sunscreens, which are typically made of zinc and titanium oxides, there is some concern that potentially titanium, though perhaps not zinc, could have some toxicity associated with it. But again, the insoluble oxides that are used in these sunscreens, is not clear whether there's any practical health risk to humans from that level of exposure. And it's now not speaking to internal cancers in this particular comment, but if sunscreens are capable of causing skin cancer at some rate, it is lower than the ultraviolet causes it for certain. And so it's still essentially a good bet. Though there are some theoretic concerns, there doesn't seem to be too much practical concern, at least at this point, for humans. And so I use it on a daily basis myself. I put them on my children, and I'm not overly concerned with those risk levels.
This is the IMA Doctor Show, taking place during It Takes Two with Amy and JJ. We've got Dr. Michael Blankenship with us until 1:30. You can text your questions in to 35270. You can also reach the doctor on our Laney studio line, 701-237-5948. Don't go anywhere else. We've got more It Takes Two coming up after this.
One show gives you the information that can change and shape your life. The IMA Doctors. Get straight talk and honest answers to your healthcare questions from the team of doctors at IMA Healthcare.
Dr. Michael Blankenship is with us. Doctor, here's another question for you in our text club. How much harsher is the sun in summer versus winter in regards to skin care?
So ultraviolet B does change quite a bit from time of year to time of year. And so the worst months are centered on about June 20th. And so in the wintertime, UVA rays predominate. And though they are carcinogenic and they do cause photo aging, they don't burn us nearly as effectively. So you have to be out somewhere where you're getting like reflection, like ice fishing or something like that, for many hours to get burned, where it's, you know, someone who's sensitive on June 20th, they could get burned with as little as 10 or 15 minutes of noonday sun. So in regards to sun burns and things like that, then yes, you know, you're looking at like May, June, July being the worst, but you can get burned in August and April as well.
Another question, how important is it for men to moisturize and have as extensive skincare regimens as women do?
Well, again, that's personal preference. So if you have a really dry skin and you're a guy, you need to moisturize just like if you were a female and had that. But
we've kind of normalized skincare for men recently. You know, I feel like it's more predominant that if you want, you know, if you've had dry, cracking skin, they make a product for you that isn't perfumey and you don't feel like you are any less manly for using it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, they sell it in non-floral bottles and stuff like that. It tends to all be the same stuff, just less fragrance. But no, it's the same recommendations, male or female, essentially. And, you know, especially if you have a job, it's hard on your skin, you know, outside a lot or you're with drying materials, then yeah, you're going to need to use it quite often.
There you go. We've got Dr. Blankenship until 1:30 today. This is the IMA Doctor Show. If you want to make an appointment with the IMA healthcare system, you should. IMA is healthcare is focused on the whole person, preventative and specialized medical care. Instead of just treating a symptom, they'll work to find the source of that symptom and what it means to protect your overall health. Their phone number 701-280-2033 or go to imahealthcare.com.
One show gives you the information that can change and shape your life. The IMA Doctors. Get straight talk and honest answers to your healthcare questions from the team of doctors at IMA Healthcare.
Dr. Michael Blankenship is with us, a board-certified dermatologist who provides comprehensive care to patients with various types of skin conditions and diseases. He's with the IMA Healthcare Organization. It's the IMA Doctor Show. All right, so let's get into this next question here in our text club, which, by the way, you're invited to text if you have a question for Dr. Blankenship, 35270. You can also get on our Laney studio line, 701-237-5948, 1-800-880-5346. Do you do Mohs procedures, M-O-H-S?
So I'm trained to do Mohs micrographic surgery, as are all dermatologists. However, it takes a histotech and a bunch of specialized equipment. So most of us don't do that on a daily basis. We'll refer to a colleague that does basically just that. So I don't perform it on a regular basis, no.
Okay. Are there any home remedy opportunities that you recommend for removing warts or skin tags?
skin tags, no. Warts, any irritating substance can be useful, but if you're going to do something at home, you might as well just get an over-the-counter salicylic acid plaster, because they'll be probably more effective than anything else that can be done. But I've seen people do, you know, apple cider vinegar, duct tape, taping a aspirin tablet to them. Anything that's irritating to the wart can stimulate the body's immune response and can be effective, actually.
Oh, boy. I've never heard that duct tape one. I'll have to Google that a little bit later on. My husband has an extremely dry scalp and face. He moisturizes daily. However, he has gotten older, and he now experiences breakouts and clusters around his nose and forehead. What's the best way to treat these breakouts since he already has dry skin?
So it may not simply be dry skin. He could potentially have seborrheic dermatitis, also known as dandruff, which can affect the face as well. It's possible he has SIBO psoriasis, which is a type of psoriasis. And even some variants of rosacea actually can start off looking more like dry skin than anything else, but then can develop pimple or acne-like lesions. So the first thing to do would be to figure out which one of those it is, because they do sometimes require different types of treatments.
I was just discussing with the doctor during the break monkeypox, and we have a question here about it.
Okay.
There's a lot of national news about monkeypox. Is that something we should be concerned about in the FM area?
It is in the FM area. There have been a couple of cases that I'm aware of that have been diagnosed as being true monkeypox. And it's just something that you need to be appropriately concerned with. Nothing that's going to affect most people. And so if you take normal precautions, like with any infectious disease, you'll probably be just fine, frankly.
When it comes to something like monkeypox, is there a lasting effect from it? I know that, you know, they look like boils on the skin. You know, do those things heal themselves well?
It can cause permanent scarring in the areas, like many pox viruses can. And of course, you know, it can be lethal. And so there, you know, death can be a result of that. But for most people that get it and don't have a very severe case, it can cause scarring.
This person says, I always seem to burn my lower lip and it'll scab over for weeks. I'm 63. I always wear sunscreen and chapstick. What's the best thing to do for your lips when you're out and about in the sun?
So if you notice that your lower lip is becoming repeatedly like that and it takes relatively little sun exposure for that to occur, it may be because you've already developed a precancerous condition on your lower lip called actinic keratitis, in which case that needs to be treated first before preventative measures can be resumed.
When it comes to seeing a dermatologist, I feel like a lot of people say, well, yeah, I'm monitoring, you know, my moles to see if there's changes in it. Yep. I'll be honest. I'm in the skin every single day, Dr. Blankenship, and I don't notice if my moles are doing anything differently. I mean, when you're talking about a change that should make me make an appointment, what are we talking about?
So it can be difficult, but if you notice a lesion that is changing rapidly enough that you notice it's different from month to month, especially if it's associated with unusual color, it's only growing on one piece of the lesion, or alternatively, it's painful or itchy for no reason, or it bleeds for no reason, or with very minimal trauma. Those are the things that are most concerning and should be looked at. Now, most of those are still going to be benign lesions, but it should at least be evaluated.
Okay, we're sending kids back to school. Some kids are off to college. And that means some communal bathroom time. When it comes to stuff like athlete's foot and things that we should be, you know, concerned about. I remember my parents were like, you're going to wear these flip-flops every time you use the dorm shower. Just that's the way to do it. What are the things we should be looking forward to when we get into this new school year to make sure that we're taking care of our kids?
Well, so of course, respiratory type diseases are very common, and those are going to be out there. Some of those will rarely be associated with a rash, but then there are the more common things like molluscum, sometimes called water warts, true warts caused by human papillomavirus, and then there kids in sports will sometimes be able to pass herpes virus infections or impetigo between each other, and so those are all things to be on the lookout for.
Okay, someone here. Echoing my parents' warning, never had athlete's foot before. How long does it take to get over it? Bought over-the-counter cream for it. So it sounds like this person is suffering from it now.
Yep. So typically what I'll say is try the over-the-counter for about 2 weeks. And if you're not getting significant improvement, then you may need a prescription strength.
Okay. And as we get into that time of year too, where people start wearing boots more often, I've noticed that, gosh, sometimes people take a sock off and the skin is just peeling off of, like, the foot, right? Does that mean that they've kept it moist for too long? I mean, what should they be doing to help, like, with their foot health?
So typically, you know, in the wintertime when people are wearing boots, eczema is very common, especially below the knee. And so even if you don't have to use that other times of year, if you switch to a non-soap cleanser in the shower, and then you use a good thick moisturizer, a cream rather than a lotion, that will help keep that top layer of skin moisturized and should help prevent that, actually.
Those people who are going out there and getting their nails done on a regular basis. Again, I'm going off of my wife. Every now and then she's like, sometimes I just don't want anything on my nails because I feel like they get healthier when I don't have polish on them. Is there any truth to that? Does it matter at all?
The nails are dead. They're just skin cells that are really tightly packed together. And so you can't really make them healthy or unhealthy. They just kind of are. However, if you repeatedly do things like, you know, acrylic nails, you know, aggressive pedicures, manicures, things like that. Yeah, you can make the nail weak. You can make it brittle and you can chip it. So
what about, and I'm not trying to cause any kind of a panic here, but what about people who get stuff like, like a manicure or a pedicure? Is there any concern about doing that too much, you know, like?
I mean, yes, you can compromise the nail's integrity, though it will grow out normally after that. You can also get overly aggressive or, you know, slip and you can cut the nail folds and that can lead to an infection or just inflammation. So, yeah, you can overdo it. But for most people, it's a minor risk. And I say if you want to do it, in most instances, it's fine as long as it's at a reputable place.
If you lose a nail, like whether it's on your foot or you like your hand, what should you do to care for that? Because is it just exposed skin that's not used to being exposed underneath that then?
Yep, that with the trauma of removing it. Same things when I remove nails medically for various reasons. So typically the easiest thing to do is until the skin kind of toughens up a little bit over the nail bed, just keep it moist, a little bit of Vaseline. And then I like just using finger cots, which are these little roll-on nitrile or cotton or latex bandages that basically fit directly over a finger.
When you hurt something like a part of your skin that you bend a lot, like right at the knuckles or, you know, something like that, or your elbow or something.
Yeah.
Are any tried and true things to help that heal better rather than, you know, constantly tearing it?
So keep the skin well moisturized because if it's soft, it's more pliable and it's more likely to bend rather than crack or worsen the crack. And it can be glued as well. So a lot of cyanoacrylate glues like Nu Skin and things like that based on essentially super glue can be used to protect it as well and sometimes keep the crack from spreading.
At what point would you say Nu Skin, like that brand, I know that's the brand, yeah, right, is something that you should look into? Like how big of a cut do you need before you go to that versus maybe I should go to the hospital?
Well, I mean, so bleeding, if it's heavily bleeding, it may need to be looked at. Or alternatively, if you can sort of see that it's deeper than about 2 or 3 millimeters, that probably should at least be looked at, especially if you haven't had a tetanus shot in a while.
Oh, that's another good thing right into the school year, making sure that you're updated on things like tetanus shots. Yep. And that's not just for the kiddos, because you get a tetanus shot throughout your entire life, correct?
Yeah, they recommend a booster every 10 years, and the pertussis or whooping cough, because it's a bit more common now, we're also recommending boosters of that.
Oh, boy. And if you can't remember your last one, it's probably time to get your next one.
Yep, just get it. Because if you can't remember to go to the ED, they're just going to shoot you with it. So.
There you go. I love that. Dr. Blankenship, are you accepting new patients?
Yep, always. Yep.
And if I've got, let's say, like 3 kind of rambunctious boys all in the same age group, can I get them all in at the same time? Can we get an appointment that we can get 1, 2, 3 in a row?
Yeah, typically. Yeah. As long as one's not going to use cover and try and escape the room.
Hey,
yeah,
and you know what? Most of the time, you know, they're pretty good guys. If you missed any part of today's IMA Doctor Show, we covered a lot with Dr. Michael Blankenship, including things like tattoo removal, what we're using lasers for, these phototherapy booths, as well as all of the questions that you had as well. If you missed any moment of today's show, we're going to have it podcast at kfjoe.com. You can also hit the subscribe button on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible even, for the It Takes Two with Amy and JJ podcast. Dr. Blankenship, thank you so much. We appreciate having you here every single time you're in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And folks, if you are interested in what IMA Healthcare has to offer, and who wouldn't be, they are located on 45th Street and 32nd Avenue across from the Mexican Village. Their phone number, 701-280-2033. You can check them out online at imahealthcare.com. IMA Healthcare is focused on whole person preventative and specialized medical care. Instead of simply treating a symptom, they're going to work to find the source of that symptom and what it means to your overall health. IMA Healthcare, patient-centered healthcare. You can join us September 19th for the next IMA Doctor Show. We're going to have Susan Hansen and Dr. Denise Schumacher with us to talk about women's health. Again, Michael Blankenship, thank you so much for being in. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks.